There is nothing wrong with your internet. Do not attempt to adjust your settings. We are controlling the podcast. We control the squealing and the screams. We can make your heart flutter, your eyes blur from tears, or sharpen your mind to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit back. We are in control of what you hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your settings. You are about to experience the awe and mystery known as the female mind. You are now entering the fangirl zone.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Talk on the Fangirl Zone, a podcast where we discuss shows on the Sci-Fi Channel. I am Sean Fangirl-S.
And I'm Steve, and today we'll be discussing episode 3 of season 1 of Revival.
God, I'm loving this show.
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, we don't have any ratings for this show yet, and especially not episode 3. So here's our in-depth recap. Reality check. As Wassoff fractures, Dana's search brings her into conflict with a dangerous local family.
I think I have said Wausau more often in just these two episodes that we've already recorded.
Yes.
Than ever in my life. All right. Well, we're going to open with Kay telling Dana about how Em acquired the bag full of Oxy. That's a big, big bag.
Yes.
In a flashback, Kay and Em pay the Chick family a visit. The matriarch, Dorothy, has a flair for chicken-themed artwork. Okay, we'll go with that, I guess.
Yeah.
Kay explains that Dorothy asked the buyer to choose breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Each selection offers something different. Drugs.
Yeah.
Em wanders upstairs to Andrew's room, despite Dorothy's urging that she not disturb him. Em steals a bag of Oxy from his dresser drawer and flees. I seen this and I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yes, absolutely.
Andrew barrels outside, gun trained on her, and fires. Dana can't believe Em would act out like that. Kay counters that perhaps Dana doesn't know Em as well as she thinks she does.
Yeah.
I'm surprised she made it out of there. I'm going to be real honest.
Yes, absolutely. Later, Dana chats with Gunderson at the station. He notices she's leafing through the Chick brothers' file. Dana tells him that she believes they tried to murder someone who stole from them. However, it's their older brother, Anthony, who's pulling the string. Anthony left for New York and now can't return to Wausau since quarantine went into effect. Thank God for that.
Right?
The two brothers are bad enough. Meanwhile, Jordan encounters bullies at school. Cooper stands up for his friend when one kid attempts to stab Jordan with a pencil to see if she'd heal, since she's a reviver. Yeah.
And that's not psychotic behavior or anything.
No, not at all. So Cooper accidentally slams Jordan's locker door in the boy's face, causing his nose to bleed. Elsewhere, Dana visits Dorothy Chick. She shows Dorothy a picture of Kay, asking if the latter paid her a visit before Revival Day. Dorothy compliments Kay for being a sweet young lady, while her friend, M, disturbed her son and stole from him. Then Dana whips out a picture of M, who Dorothy confirms as the thief. Before Dana departs, Dorothy urges to purchase some of chicken-themed artwork. Quid pro quo.
I snorted when she said that.
Yes.
I wasn't expecting it.
No.
But I'm also very glad that she had no idea that Dana was M's sister.
Yes.
Well, we have Dorothy fetching a piece for Dana, and Andrew descends the stairs, reuniting with his former classmate. He looked so friendly, right?
Yeah.
He threatened Dana's family. Should she continue prying into things concerning the check, there'll be more than one dead Cypress. Excuse me, did you just confess?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm like, what? But instead, he gives her a comic book for Cooper and informs her that the lead character has no qualms about killing those who threaten his family. I also did not catch which comic book this was, and
no,
I know somebody else probably did.
Yeah, probably so.
So tell me what it was. After this, Dana pops by Cooper's school to pick up her son. She learns he's been suspended for the remainder of the week for hurting that kid. I mean, he did deserve it. He was trying to stab Jordan. Come on.
Yes, really.
However, the teacher or principal or whoever that was seemed to side with the bullies. Dana is pissed.
Yes.
How can this little girl be a danger to society? Come on. And upon learning that the teacher called Jordan's parents an hour ago to pick her up, Dana decides to give her a ride home. While Cooper and Jordan go to play upstairs, Dana chats with Jordan's parents after hearing them screaming at each other when they got to the door.
Yeah.
That was really sad, because just hearing that, you're like, oh my God, what is this poor little girl going through?
Yeah.
But instead of what I was thinking, they're telling Dana that their little girl died before revival day, and the one standing before her isn't her. She came back wrong. And when Jordan asks if she can have some cookies for her and Cooper, they're like, yeah, yeah. They were really awkward. Like, they don't want to make eye contact with her. And could there have been more crosses in that room?
No.
Not a vampire, okay?
Really? Yeah, that talk about not parents of the year candidates.
Right? I thought it was really interesting, too, though, that Dana was really, like, getting in on him. And I don't know how much of that is because of M, or how much she just truly was like, yeah.
Disgusted with the way they were treating their daughter. Yeah,
I wasn't sure which it really was.
Yeah, Dana gives them the business for treating their daughter like a piece of crap. They might not believe Jordan is really Jordan, but she's no threat to them. You gotta love how this series tackles the mistreatment and discrimination of the marginalized people. It's very relevant given the state of the U.S.
Oh my gosh, so much so.
Yeah. After this, Dana drops Cooper off at Nella's. Meanwhile, Ibrahim records his finding. Unfortunately, the CDC liaison still hasn't discovered the reason behind Revival Day. Carla arrives with the toxicology report for Arlene, but she doesn't refer to the latter as such. Ibrahim insists Arlene is a person who deserves to be called by her name despite the circumstances.
I was kind of pissed with that.
Yeah, he fiddles with his samples after looking over the report himself. Then Ibrahim asks Jeannie if he can get a police escort to the Dittman house to conduct an investigation. He has a hypothesis he wants to test. Of course, he'd love to have Dana accompany him, but he'll have to settle for her dad instead. Wayne volunteers to join Ibrahim.
I thought this was kind of funny, too.
Yes.
Because, like, no, you get me. It's like, okay. But he, like, doesn't even want him around. So it's like,
no!
What, are you trying to mess with him? But I also thought, okay, foreshadowing, they kept showing certain specimen, like, I don't know what they're called, those containers.
Yeah.
I'm like, the okay, thank you. Yes, I didn't take my... that. I took anatomy.
Yeah, one of them was, I think, the last one that seemed to have had something in it that had grown and forced the lid up.
Yeah, but I swear
mossy
that...
mossy water or something.
I swear, too, that when his assistant came in, one of them, like, disappeared. I'm like, did he move it? Did she grab it? What's going on? So I think I have to rewatch that, because I think there's something happening more than what we just see.
Yeah.
Later, we have Bob Dittman, weirdly suspicious of Ibrahim. It's like, hello, he's trying to help. Why are you freaking out? But
yeah,
we do end up finding out. Okay. Ibrahim wants to run a few tests before wandering into the bedroom. He's testing water and he's testing this and that. He's like, oh, you have well, let me try this. But he ends up, instead of going to the bathroom to test that water, finding the bedroom where Bob and his late wife kept his mother-in-law in chains.
Yeah. Wonder why she's got an attitude.
Thank you. Because I seen that, I'm like, wait a second. Mind you, the Wausau Police Force is still searching for Arlene. So I'm thinking, was this supposed to be before or after? But we had those weird kind of flashes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this was supposed to be before Revival Day this was happening.
Yes.
Ibrahim also spots a bottle of mercuric chloride on the side of the table among a bevy of medications. I thought I took a lot because of heartburn and everything else.
Right.
Next, Dittman has a shotgun trained on him for snooping around. Wayne, how long did it take you to figure out he walked away from you? Come on.
Yes.
Because thankfully he does defuse the situation before Dittman gets trigger happy. But again, you were in a very small kitchen. It wasn't like it's a mansion. Come on.
No.
We learned at the funeral that Dittman's wife, her funeral, sorry, a little confusing. Maybe that's why he was so tense, because it was her funeral that day and a lot going on. But I don't know, because that sermon wasn't so great, I guess.
No, his speech was not the best.
No, he was me.
Yeah.
But elsewhere, Em wakes up in Rhodey's room, and apparently she finally got a decent night's sleep since Revival Day. Rhodey tells Em how he died, an infection in his hand from stabbing it while pitting an avocado. And I shouldn't laugh, but my friend actually did the same thing.
Oh, no.
Not the infection part. Thankfully, she went to the doctor. But yeah, stabbed right through the avocado into her hand. I know. Not very punk rock of Rhodey, but, you know, Em explains that she's unsure how she died. The circumstances surrounding her death are muddled at best. All she can remember is being high on the bridge before waking up at the bottom of the waterfall with a heck of a lot of water in her lungs.
Yeah. Well, then Em shows Rhodey her journal, which is full of illustrations related to her murder, fragments of memory and imagery. Rhodey is invested. He wants to help Em solve her murder. At the same time, Dana stands on the bridge, trying to piece together her little sister's death. Later, Wayne attends Terry's funeral. Dittman's eulogy gets weird and misogynistic. Suddenly, Arlene lurches through the double doors, wailing for her daughter. She barrels towards the open casket. Wayne orders everyone to leave as he points his gun at her. Dittman tries to attack Arlene, but she snaps his neck.
She's still missing part of her head, too.
Yes. Wayne fires a few rounds at Arlene. However, bullets are quite ineffective. It's Blaine's ritualistic demon expelling that seems to do the trick. Well, I don't know about that yet or not. After Arlene crawls into the coffin, Blaine sets it ablaze. Can Arlene survive this? I bet so.
I mean, the one guy got out of the flames.
Yep. After this, we learn that the CDC will do its best to separate Arlene and Terry's charred body.
That's a disturbing thought.
Yes. Arlene's tissue is already healing, though. Blaine is in lockup, but he won't be for long. Public is already siding with him for burning Arlene. Wayne and Mayor Dillich meet with Governor June Harris. If you recall, Wayne called the governor on last week's episode because, let's face it, Wausau ain't doing so hot.
No. Ibrahim soon joins them. He declares that Dittman was poisoning Arlene with mercuric chloride. He found traces of the mercury in Arlene's brain matter. This proves revivers aren't inherently violent. He was screwing with her way before she died.
Yep.
Governor Harris seemingly sides with Wayne, though, insisting the sheriff can have all the resources he requires to track down and tag all revivers. What? They're not deer.
No, they aren't.
Ibrahim and the mayor vehemently protest this. Harris takes it further. If any revivers show signs of quote-unquote aggression, Wayne has her permission to contain them how he sees fit. Oh, and I was right there with Ibrahim here, because he's remarking that, well, that sounds an awful lot like an internment camp for revivers.
Yep.
Harris adds that once revivers are under control, then they can discuss lifting the quarantine on the town. I think you need to get some of your people under control.
Yeah.
This is what happens when people fear what they don't understand. They exert tyrannical-like control. No nod to what's happening in the world right now.
Yep.
Elsewhere, Nella tells Dana about Em's fight in the bar. She remarks that Em seemed down before she lashed out at a fellow patron, and she left with some punk guy. And Dana had a light bulb moment because she pulls out the flyer for November, December, or dismember. See, I knew I was going to do that.
Yeah.
Which Em left behind in her vehicle. I do believe that it was a clue for her. Like, hey, I'm okay, but I'm going to be with this guy. Which,
yeah.
But Dana mutters that she explicitly told Em not to date a musician. Must run in the family.
Sounds familiar.
Right? Speaking of Em, she's at a warehouse for November Dismember's show, and Rhodey greets her before he takes to the stage. Andrew and his brother spy Em among the concert attendees and recognize her. Oh no!
Then Dana enters the scene as Rhodey performs with his band. At one point, Rhodey slices his chest, even sticking his hand inside the wound.
That was so gross.
Yes, it was. At least he didn't pull out anything.
Oh God.
Next, the cut heals instantly and everyone cheers. While Rhodey screams into a microphone, the Czech brothers confront Em. They attack her. Rhodey calls them out before making his way toward them. Andrew flees, but Dana manages to tase Adam. She also finds drugs on his person before taking him in. Later, M and Rhodey escape the concert, making a beeline for the bridge. Once a safe distance away from the danger, M kisses Rhodey. At the station, Dana interrogates Adam. This is his third offense, so he could be going away for a really long time.
Oh no, we're all so sad.
Yeah, now he's endangering innocent concert goers. Dana claims she wants to talk to Anthony Check, the brains of the operation. Dana is aiming to strike a deal with him, so Adam reluctantly dials his number. Dana proposes a truce between the Check and Cypress families. She'll drop the charges against Adam and release him. Hell, she'll even give back the Oxy M stole. In exchange, the Check brothers must stay steer clear of the Cypress's crew.
I don't know. Do you think that the other one is going to really go for that? Because he seemed, I don't know, hell-bent on causing trouble.
Yeah, I kind of doubt it. Yeah, the bigger, older, middle brother, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I doubt anything his brother agreed to probably won't go with him unless his brother's right there to threaten him with death or something.
Yeah, I'm thinking probably. And I did think it was interesting when Rhodey gets basically all the other fans to stop the Check brothers. He's like, they're messing with my girl. I'm like, aw.
Yeah.
How cute. But hey, alternative people, you know, punk rock and everything else, they're like some of the best people you'll ever meet. Just throwing that out there. When Anthony doesn't respond immediately, Dana calls him out. I thought that was interesting because his brother's freaking out. And Anthony's like, let me think this over. I don't know.
Yeah.
She knows the brothers are behind M's murder. Well, she thinks she knows.
Yeah, she thinks she knows.
Adam realizes at this moment that M is a reviver. He claims that he and Andrew didn't know who she was and that she was Dana's sister at all. So there's no way that they did something. Yeah, okay.
Right.
Anthony decides to take the deal. He gives his word that Andrew and Adam will leave Dana and M alone. Meanwhile, Abraham notices one of the samples has inexplicably grown. That mossy water from Moore Creek. Now it's a whole lot of, I don't know, mush?
Yeah.
Dana returns to Cooper at the end of a long day, and she gets a text from M. M reassures Dana that she's okay and safe, thanks to her. Dana looks pretty emotional, because Cooper said basically the same thing. Are we safe from the bad guys? Or did you save everyone? It's like, oh, God, yeah, but you didn't do it the way she wanted, pretty much. Later, we see Rhodey and M sitting on the edge of the bridge, and he embraces her. M reveals that she's never been to the beach. Hell, she's never flown anywhere. And she's been pretty sheltered most of her life because she was explaining all of her injuries and rods and pins and everything.
Yeah.
And it took her dying to truly feel alive. And Rhodey vows to take her to the beach one day when they can leave town. Assuming your guys are still going to be around.
Right.
Then Rhodey encourages her to jump off the bridge with them. When she does, she sees flashes from the night she died. And as soon as they started showing, like, the images and going back to her drawings, I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. Blaine was on the bridge with her. Speaking of, Wayne releases Blaine at, you know, when this is all happening.
Right.
Blaine reunites with his followers as he asks them if they're ready for a holy war. They all cheer. Love is a good religious zealot. They're always the best baddish guy. Sometimes they're good, but sometimes, not often.
Yeah, very rarely.
But I want to know who the kid was they were kind of like focusing on.
Right. No telling. Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on each and every episode this season. Our deadline for feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern every Friday during the season. You can send your feedback via email or audio to contact us at fangirlzone.com. Please review and rate us on iTunes and any other platform you use for your podcast. With good ratings and reviews, it helps other fans of the show find us, as there's probably a couple of revival podcasts out there. Tell your friends, and we hope you're enjoying our podcast. And don't forget to check out the other great Fangirl Zone podcast.
You can check everything out over at www.fangirlzone.com. You have our contacts page and our podcast page and all the fun ways to get a hold of us. And, you know, it shows everywhere we are, so you can check out all the stuff that we've been doing because it is con season, so you'll be seeing pictures. But for this episode of Sci-Fi Talk...
I'm Steve. Okay, talk to me about this because this is a mother-clucking masterpiece.
And I'm Sean Fangirl S. Until next time.